What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
We begin the day with parts of the country crippled by winter weather.
This extreme weather in Texas has been very disruptive for the farming community.
We'll look at how it's interrupting daily life and possibly the economy. Plus, is your company responsible if you catch COVID-19 in the workplace?
How do you prove that you got an infection, an airborne infection, at work versus at the supermarket versus in your home?
And Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway is adding to its portfolio. We'll tell you the latest picks. It's Wednesday, February 17th. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. Millions of Americans were without power after a storm brought snow, ice, blackouts, and record-setting low temperatures to swaths of the country. On Monday, a tornado struck in North Carolina, killing three people. Weather in recent days has left at least 20 people dead, according to the Associated Press. As we talked about last night on the show, one of the hardest hit states has been Texas. As people there deal with power outages and bitter cold, some farmers and ranchers are facing a crisis. For that, we turn to markets editor Quinton Webb. Hi, Quinton.
Hi there, Mark.
So, Quinton, to quote the Texas Agriculture Commissioner, no feed, no water, and no heat doesn't make for a good situation. What is agriculture there confronting right now?
Well, that's a very clear summary from the commissioner. This extreme weather in Texas has been very disruptive for the farming community. Of course, Texas is a major agricultural center, one of the largest in the country, both for livestock and for poultry. And that has created all kinds of problems with this extreme winter weather. So those range from pipes freezing, which means that poultry farms can't get water to the chickens, to mills being unable to operate, which means problems with creating new animal feed, to, you know, problems with getting enough water for calves and cattle, to calves dying of exposure. It's really a very difficult picture.
We should point out Texas is home to one of the country's largest dairy herds. What's happening with milk production?
That's right. So there's one cooperative, for example, in Dallas, where as a consequence of power rationing, they have had to close their processing plant. And of course, cows don't stop producing milk just because the power is rationed and the processing plant is closed. And so that results in this terrible kind of wasteful situation where ultimately the farmers are forced to pour the unprocessed milk onto their fields.
This is something we'll be watching throughout the day. Quinton Webb, thanks so much.
Thanks very much.
Also today, we're expecting quarterly results from Choice Hotels and Hyatt Hotels. We'll also get retail sales figures for January, showing us how consumer spending fared at the beginning of the year. And billionaire Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway is adding to its investment portfolio. A filing showed the conglomerate has purchased $8.6 billion in Verizon Communications stock, as well as $4.1 billion in Chevron. A hacker claims to have stolen large amounts of confidential information from the global law firm Jones Day and posted many files on the dark web. Jones Day's prominent clients include a number of major corporations and former President Donald Trump. The Journal's Tawnell Hobbs has more.
You know, a lot of these files that these law firms have are files that are attorney-client privilege. And they're typically not open to the public. And what this hacker did and said that he did was to actually go and steal this company's files. I mean, I'm talking numerous downloads that this hacker made of these companies' files. And we have already come across information that is marked attorney-client privilege and is marked confidential in some of these files that this hacker said was stolen from Jones Day.
Jones Day issued a statement disputing that its network has been breached, saying that a file-sharing company that it has used was recently compromised and had information taken. The firm adds it will continue to investigate and will be in discussion with affected clients and appropriate authorities. President Biden says he expects a significant percentage of K-8 schools to reopen 5 days a week within his first 100 days in office. Speaking at a CNN town hall event last night, the president said schools may seek to remain open during the summer and urged that teachers be vaccinated to speed the return to in-person learning. And the president is scheduled to meet with senior labor leaders at the White House today. People familiar with the matter say they are hoping to win commitments for a massive federal investment in infrastructure, as well as efforts to create jobs in clean tech and alternative energy. Just ahead, dealing with COVID-19 claims in the workplace after the break.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Amazon is being sued by New York State over claims the company hasn't done enough to protect its workers from COVID-19. In the complaint, the state attorney general said Amazon failed to comply with state cleaning and disinfection requirements at its facilities. It also says the tech giant didn't adequately notify employees of infected coworkers. An Amazon spokeswoman said the lawsuit doesn't reflect the company's, quote, industry-leading response to the pandemic. Early on in the pandemic, insurance companies and business groups feared they'd be overwhelmed by workers claiming they caught the coronavirus on the job. But things haven't quite turned out that way. Relatively few people are bringing workers' compensation claims, and even fewer cases are going through. Reporter Lauren Weber writes about workplace issues and careers for the Wall Street Journal, and she joins me now. Lauren, welcome.
Hi, Mark.
Lauren, claims are still being filed, but not to the extent as first thought. What did your reporting reveal about why this is?
Right. It turns out that the number of claims filed related to COVID-19 were more than offset by a very steep decline in claims that had nothing to do with COVID-19. So, for instance, fewer people were going to work. That meant that there were fewer injuries at the workplace. Lockdowns meant that a lot of workplaces were closed also. So, fewer people were traveling for work, so you wouldn't have the kinds of car accidents that people might have filed before. So, because there were so many fewer claims filed for those kinds of, typical day-to-day workplace injuries, it turns out there were fewer claims filed in 2020 than were expected and fewer claims filed than in 2019.
So fewer claims are being filed. Among the claims that are being filed, what does the picture look like for approval?
It is very complicated, and that's partly because workers' compensation programs are run by states. Some states chose to pass what are called presumptive eligibility laws. That meant that early on, the states created a law saying that if someone files a workers' compensation claim saying that they were infected with COVID-19, people in certain occupations were given the presumption that they contracted the virus at work. That's primarily first responders, people in healthcare. It might have been law enforcement or emergency medical technicians, people who had a very clear reason to believe that they might have contracted the virus at work. So more than a dozen states, I think ultimately it was around 18 or 19 states, passed these measures. What the numbers show, and also I should add, there's no really clear comprehensive data set for how workers' compensation claims have been handled since it is handled by states. But a few states have published their data, and what's become clear is that in states where these presumptive eligibility measures were in place, there are much higher acceptance rates for these claims. So if a healthcare worker submitted a workers' comp claim in states where these measures were in place, chances are it was accepted and they were able to get their medical costs covered, their lost wages, things like that. So whereas in states that did not have the eligibility measures, the denial rates were much higher.
Got it. So the chances of your claim being accepted depends a lot on the kind of job you have and where you work. Let's talk about what goes into proving a case. Are these claims difficult to prove?
They're extremely difficult to prove. And that's where so much of this becomes complicated. How do you prove that you got an infection, an airborne infection, at work versus at the supermarket versus in your home where you might have been infected by someone you live with? So it's really, really hard to prove this. That's why these presumptive eligibility measures are so important for people who say that they were infected at work. Because if that's not in place, then the burden of proof is on the individual, on the worker, to prove they got infected at work. That is very, very difficult to do.
In Congress, we've seen a lot of discussion about a so-called liability shield for companies, meaning they can't be responsible for everything that happens in the midst of the pandemic. Does this come into play at all with what we've been talking about?
That won't have too much impact on the workers' compensation system because workers' comp was designed to basically handle these kinds of questions of who's liable for certain injuries or illnesses. So even if there's a liability shield in place, and I believe some states have passed them, we don't have a federal liability shield, but in some states that exists, it's not going to have any impact on workers' ability to file a workers' comp claim. That right still exists, whether there's a liability shield or not.
And finally, Lauren, looking forward, what does the picture look like? Will it stay status quo or become more difficult or even easier to get compensation?
I can't look into a crystal ball and give you an answer for sure, but what I can say is it's still very unclear how these claims are going to be handled, partly because so many of them were denied. I found that in states, especially where there was no presumption of eligibility, 50% or more of COVID-19 related claims were being denied. What's going to make a difference next is how courts handle those claims where it's maybe a little ambiguous. So when I spoke to lawyers who are representing workers who filed the claims, a lot of them are thinking really carefully about which cases they're going to bring to court first, because the precedents are going to make a big difference. How judges decide these cases, how much lenience they give to the claimants versus the employers, how they interpret this question of liability, that will make a difference going forward. So when I spoke to lawyers, they're thinking very strategically about which cases to bring forward to try to establish some of these precedents.
The Journal's Lauren Weber. Lauren, thank you for sharing your reporting with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And finally, it's not just swing sets and gardens in backyards these days. For many people living in Canada and the northern U.S., homemade ice rinks have been a long-time tradition in colder climates, but pandemic restrictions and winter boredom have led to a boom this season. People who are going stir-crazy at home are taking on this project for the first time, while some veterans are turning it up a notch. One man has a red light programmed to emit the Pittsburgh Penguins hockey team's signature goal horn pitch. If this is something that's of interest, you can buy a rink building kit to get you started. There's even a Facebook group for first timers. We have plenty of resources for you on WSJ.com. And that's what's news for Wednesday. We're back tonight with a new show. If you like us, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.